by the plow where a flock of birds nest.
Welcome back to Homefront. That's unfamiliar music because we have a special guest today. In the studio, we have Dee Dee and Paul Servino. They're both incredibly talented, creative types with wonderful resumes, but we're not here to brag on them. We're actually going to talk about something that even if you don't have world-class talent, you can cultivate, and that's the gift of hospitality. It's a skill. They've written a beautiful book called Pinot, Pasta, and Parties, and they're going to teach you how. So stick around here on Homefront.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Hey everyone, my name is Kyle, and I'm from One More Wave. One More Wave is a local nonprofit that provides wounded and disabled veterans with customized surfing solutions. Our goal is to decrease the daily suicide veteran rate of 22 per day. If you want to learn more about what we're doing over at One More Wave, please check us out at onemorewave.net. There's plenty of ways to get involved, donating time, money, helping us out by sharing our mission on social media, as well as buying our apparel. So please check us out at onemorewave.net. We'd love to hear from you.
Hi, my name is Paul Servino. I'm with my beautiful wife, Dee Dee Servino. We have written a book called Pinot, Pasta, and Parties, which is the quintessential book on Neapolitan Italian cooking. It's easy, it's beautiful, it's rewarding, and if you don't know how to cook, make you into a cook. Dee Dee?
It's a great New Year's resolution to buy the book. You can mix drinks, make Italian food, and you can find the book at PinotPastaAndParties.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and really all over the place. So Happy New Year, and buy the book.
You gotta buy this book here, you understand? This is Paulie from Goodfellas. You don't buy the book, Pinot, Pasta, and Parties, I gotta turn my back on you.
Hey guys, it's Daniel Lehman. I am the director of VA lending for Veterans One Home Loans here in San Diego, California. We believe that if you've served your country, you deserve to own a piece of it. Most banks see their role as getting you a loan once you're ready. Our role is very different in the sense that we focus on education and planning from an early stage in your home buying process. If you're ready to get on the path to home ownership, or if you have any questions at all, please give us a call at 760-655-1419 or visit us at v1lending.com. That's V, the number one, lending.com.
AM 1170, The Answer.
I won't find it. And the angels
love. Welcome back to Homefront. I'm your host, Aaron J. Brooks. In the studio today, we have Dee Dee and Paul Servino. Dee Dee is an Emmy Award winner, and Paul is a very accomplished actor, business person, author. And we are here to talk about a bunch of things today, but we're going to lead off with this book. It's a beautiful book that's in front of me, Pinot, Pasta, and Parties. What led you guys to write this book? I know that in a divided country, a lot of times people can't sit around a table and enjoy themselves. And a lot of times with family, people get stressed out. This book seems to give you turnkey opportunities to get people together and share that gift of hospitality.
My wife said, you know what? We ought to write a cookbook. It's as simple as that. And she knew nothing about cookbooks or cooking or anything. I said, well, I mean, okay, that's interesting, but it's a lot of work. And she said, I think we can do it. So we talked about it. And she called some people. There was an agent involved, made the deal in a week, and there we were.
Well, it's a beautiful book. I tried to get this ahead of Christmas, and you guys actually sold out on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very popular for Christmas. And as you can see, it's really a coffee table book, and it's got red in it, and it's a festive-looking book. So Paul is an incredible chef. You know, he knows all these wonderful Neapolitan recipes. His mother was a great cook. So, of course, I'm like, you know, we should do a cookbook, and I love to mix drinks. I said, you handle the food, I'll handle the drinks, we'll have a beautiful book, and we do.
When you just mentioned something that's really important, which is partnership when you host something. I think, you know, cooking is part art and part science, but there's an incredible amount of skill involved. And I think sometimes that's intimidating. But this book seems to be presented in sort of a crawl, walk, run method, that the easier recipes and opportunities are in the front end, and it increasingly gets a little more varsity as you move along.
Well, let me put it this way. Most cookbooks, you don't get beyond the go by this list.
Right.
You know, the ingredients list is very complicated. The emphasis of this book is Neapolitan cooking. That is from Naples, where pizza was invented, where marinara sauce was invented, where the great singer in history, Enrico Caruso, was born, where my father was born, up on the hill in Vomero. Crest goes back to 1150. So the family is, even though I'm blue-blooded, I can't get the free ride on the subway in New York. But anyway, it's so Neapolitan cooking is simple. It is not like French cooking, which is complicated and can be wonderful, but it's so complicated you really can't buy a French cookbook and go to cook. You can buy this book if you know nothing about cooking, and you will see such simple recipes like a marinara. Let me give you the story of marinara. Marinara means sailor in Neapolitan. In Italian, the word is marinaio. In Neapolitan, the word is marinara. So this is a sailor's sauce. They went out on the little boats, and they took olive oil, tomatoes, and garlic and basil with them. Came time for lunch. They'd fire up the stove, fry the garlic a little bit, put in the tomatoes and a little basil, et voila, and cook some pasta, et voila. You were eating in 35 minutes.
Well, you're in San Diego, so you're surrounded by Marines and sailors. And most of them have always tried to assist the cooking that was available on ships. So a lot of times guys squirrel away, you know, not just hot sauce or cloves of garlic or things that they can add to this is a history that goes back, you know, thousands of years.
Oh, we have been cooking, I would guess marinara is like 800 years old. A pizza,
probably
which
longer.
Was invented in Naples, I mean, it's got to be 500, 800, 1,000 years old.
So, and Aaron, you astutely picked up on the fact that it's a partnership and it's a way to bring people together. And, of course, it's pinot pasta and parties. We don't want to forget that part because we throw parties all the time. We love to cook for people and we have a ball and nobody ever leaves. We always say that. Nobody goes home. They're always there till 3 in the morning. So we give them the couch and, you know, they're full from the meal and the drinks. And it's just a wonderful life when you celebrate that way every day.
I think sometimes we get used to eating out or eating on the go, or instead of sitting and drinking our coffee, you know, running with it, instead of sitting and having a conversation, you know, we're walking and talking. This book is about that art of hospitality, that sitting and entertaining and showing honor to someone.
About which no one knows as much as my wife, who did it at the White House, who knows how to do this better than anybody I have ever seen. She threw a birthday party for me a couple of years ago. The guest list was extraordinary.
The governor.
So governor.
Celebrities.
Oh my God. So for people who are just getting to know you beyond your outer personalities, Paul, you were born in Brooklyn.
In
New York City. And Dee Dee, where are you from originally?
Appalachia, Kentucky.
So this is
a mountain mama.
No one would found it. That's true.
So this is one of the things that makes this the greatest country on earth, is the way that people combine beyond formal background and faith and all those sort of things and really come together. There's just such an opportunity for unique partnerships in this beautiful country. And so your sense of hospitality in a city is based somewhat on proximity and ethnic heritage and familiar
ethnic recipes. Heritage,
yeah,
and proximity, because in Italy, even if it's a small town, everybody knows each other and everybody interacts with each other, and families tend to stay all in the same area. So your hospitality is inborn. It is the meal is the place where you vent your grievances, vent your love, describe wonderful things and terrible things, solve problems, and are reminded that you're not alone. And then when you look at any real Italian mama, she's a happy woman, because I'm making her into an Italian mama, because her heroism is based on putting her family in the best possible circumstance, feeding them the best food, and so she's happy. The Italian mamas of today, unfortunately, for dinner, they make what she used to make, which is reservations.
Right.
But she's become a great cook now. That's
yes.
a fact.
Well, thanks to Paul. He's a great teacher. You know, he teaches acting, cooking, everything. He's so great.
And
for this book, Aaron, just so you know, it's every chapter is a full menu. So it's not like a regular cookbook. It's a theme. It's a menu. It's a drink. It's everything. So if you're new to cooking, just pick a chapter.
Yeah.
And it'll give you we didn't want a regular cookbook where it's sort of an encyclopedia. That's boring. So we really worked it out with the themes and the pictures and the food, so the food matches the drink and the dessert. So we did put a lot of work into it, but it was a labor of love.
It's all actually, as one person put it, this is a love letter to each other.
You know, one of my favorite cookbooks is a departed author named Pat Conroy. You know, he wrote The Prince of Tides and Great Santini, and his cookbook was a lot like this in the sense that there was literature and this sort of creative process in between the food that fed that process and the things that fed the food. And I think that people that are creative, you know, something that's very interesting about, I think, cooking in a place like New York City and the time and place that you grew up,
You know, people talk about fusion cooking now as if it's something that was invented in a culinary school. When you live in proximity to people who have different ethnic heritages and ways of cooking, you end up doing fusion because you eat at each other's homes, you eat each other's food.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, one of the great stories of that in the American Southwest is, you know, Calexico and Mexicali, there's this incredible fusion between Mexican and Chinese.
Sure.
Because they cooked on what was available.
I've had that, and it's really good.
Yeah, there's been a lot of New York Times and Wall Street Journal articles about these small places where, you know, this ethnic heritage is fused what was available locally.
But not Paul. He's a purist. He goes by the book, the old Neapolitan book and ways, and he will not change it.
I don't make General Chow's marinara. I don't do that.
You can't do fusion if you don't understand what the basis of a food is.
I get it all, but my cooking is
strictly Italian. He's just old school.
Italian.
He's not changing.
Or American. Because you give me a recipe and I can do anything. I can cook anything.
Now, me, I'll experiment. I have the hand. I'll just throw everything together and it may be terrible, maybe
great. But
she
creates stuff, I don't.
But Paul is old school. He wants it absolutely pure Neapolitan cooking.
So you guys taught you how to cook, but you didn't teach you how to make the drinks.
You guys didn't wake up authors, though. Paul, your initial career choice as a young man was what? What did you seek out to be?
Well, my first ambition was to be an opera singer.
Oh, no,
and
that's
I did
not true.
Become an opera singer.
That's not true. Tell me about Paul Oatmeal.
Oh, well, that's my first lines.
5 years
in,
old.
In a play. When I was 5 years old, I was in a nutrition play. And we had a rehearsal, and as soon as I stepped on the stage, I felt it completely at home, which is, I can remember to this day. The next day was the performance, and they put chalk marks where I was supposed to stand. I was insulted. As you don't think I know.
As a five-year-old.
So then it was then that I gave out in my nutrition oak-tagged oat that I was wearing these now famous lines. I am Paul Oatmeal, true of heart and true of soul. Put me in your breakfast bowl.
You know, they say for a lot of artists, it's not learning your lines that's hard, it's forgetting them. And clearly those are ones that stuck.
But I had a lot of ambitions.
In the book and a
I'm
lot
a
of
person
other stories.
I'm an autodidact because college was not a possibility for my father and economic reasons. But that's not. I have honorary degrees, and I have enough knowledge to have 3 or 4 PhDs in various forms of endeavor. I read 50 books a year. I'm a very. I'm part of me is a studier and a closet intellectual. But my real love is doing art in a way that it hasn't been looked at. The greatest artist who ever lived may be Rembrandt, and the reason we still look at him is because of the eyes. You see all of the meaning. Now, when you see a ballet dancer, it's because of her expression. It's not because of all the moves. Mm-hmm. When you see a great painter like a Rembrandt, you know, or a painter who's not so great like Hockney, there's a huge difference. And the difference is soul. So everything I do, whether it's singing, as you know, I'm an opera singer, whatever I do, artist, sculptor, painter, writer, director, actor, whatever I do has to be done with facing towards the fundamental rules of art, and they are universal. So I love to conquer each one, and that's what I've been doing. This year is about art. This year I'm painting a lot. And they'll be available in a series of galleries on the East Coast. 9 different galleries have made an arrangement with me.
Well, Paul, you know, I think in the acting world, you know, people talk about being a triple threat. But as a Renaissance man, you're probably a quintuple threat. You're a painter and an author and an actor and a singer.
I wrote a best-selling book called How to Become a Former Asthmatic in 85. So this is my second book.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because, you know, you are a veteran. A lot of listeners to this show are veterans. And, you know, many of us go through sort of a series of career transitions. And the thing you said about being a former asthmatic, that's a transition from a setback and finding either a way to mitigate it or a way to get around it. You know, for someone who wants to be an opera and is a singer, that's a devastating condition. And you found ways to mitigate that. I think there's a lot of hope there in terms of dealing with something, finding a way around it, attacking it, and having a strategy. Can you talk a little bit about sort of getting over the disappointment or the discouragement of something like that?
When the wolf is at the door, I don't sit and hope for the best. I do what I have to do to defend the home. I would say that in opera, because of there's acid reflux, and that you can't overcome. That there's no, I mean, I've helped people overcome asthma through the breathing exercises that cured me in one day. But acid reflux is another matter. So it put a damper on the operatic career. But I've sung at the Seattle Opera. I sang at the Gala at the Metropolitan, the New York City Opera, Philharmonic Hall. I've sung a lot. I've sung concerts and recorded and Broadway shows and so forth. So I've done it because I kept looking for the answers. If you're talking about how do you overcome it, I just had to overcome something in a painting because I haven't been exclusive. I'm an accomplished sculptor, I would say. Please forgive me. But as a painter, I'm an amateur. Not now. Because I started to go after and I saw things. This is hard. I'm not getting the result I wanted to. So you say to yourself, you're either going to go sit at that easel or you're not. And just call yourself, amateurs, when the moon is right, talented dilettantes can produce something beautiful. Mm-hmm. Artists, professionals, go to work in order to become inspired. An amateur can only work when he's inspired. A professional goes to work in order to become inspired. Mm. So I overcame that battle with difficulty. And I said, so yeah, you're an actor. You don't have to do this. I said, yes, I do. And I did it. And we've got a tremendous response now from 9 galleries in New York. And that's going to be...
Well, they're actually all up and down the East Coast. It's called Wentworth Galleries. And they're in Washington and Atlanta and Florida, a few spots in New York, New Jersey. It's great.
You know, we're going to take a quick break, but if you're just joining us now in the studio, we have Dee Dee and Paul Servino. They've written a book called Pino Pasta and Parties. They are both accomplished artists, actors, political consultants, comedians. We have a pair of Renaissance people in the studio, but the thing we're going to be talking about mostly is hospitality, and they've sort of shared with us a way to make your home and your life more hospitable by opening up to other people. So stick around here on Homefront.
Hey guys, it's Daniel Lehman. I am the director of VA Lending for Veterans One Home Loans here in San Diego, California. We believe that if you've served your country, you deserve to own a piece of it. Most banks see their role as getting you a loan once you're ready. Our role is very different in the sense that we focus on education and planning from an early stage in your home buying process. If you're ready to get on the path to home ownership, or if you have any questions at all, please give us a call at 760-655-1419 or visit us at v1lending.com. That's v1lending.com.
I'm Supri Lozny with Sustainable Surplus. We're a local nonprofit that provides lightly used assets to those in need. We take excess items from companies, everything from office supplies and furniture to computers and lab equipment, and then we redistribute them to local schools and nonprofits, military and startup organizations. We just opened our first store in Carlsbad called Reuse for Good. The average savings on an item is 85%. An office chair that would normally be $300 is only $35 in our shop. It's all about providing for those who need. If you have gently used office items or you just want to donate dollars, please go to our website, sustainablesurplus.org.
Hi, my name is Paul Sorvino. I'm with my beautiful wife, Dee Dee Sorvino. We have written a book called Pino Pasta and Parties, which is the quintessential book on Neapolitan Italian cooking. It's easy, it's beautiful, it's rewarding, and if you don't know how to cook, make you into a cook. Dee Dee?
It's a great New Year's resolution to buy the book. You can mix drinks, make Italian food, and you can find the book at PinoPastaAndParties.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and really all over the place. So happy New Year, and buy the book.
You gotta buy this book. Okay, you understand? This is Paulie from Goodfellas. You don't buy the book, Pino Pasta and Parties. I gotta turn my back on you.
My name is Mark West, and I am the chair of Surfrider San Diego. As a San Diegan, and as a person who's lived here in San Diego, we have one of the greatest coastal communities in all the world. We have 72 miles of beaches that stretch all the way from Tijuana to San Clemente. It's really our greatest natural resource. It's part of our culture, it's part of our history, and we need to preserve and protect it. And that doesn't mean I want to put a giant rope around it so it's pristine. No, I want people to go out and enjoy it and be a part of it, because that's what really makes San Diego a special place that we call home. If you feel as strongly as I do about protecting our ocean waves and beaches, get on our website. It's www.surfrider, that's S-U-R-F-R-I-D-E-R-S-D.org. Plenty of information about all our committees, events, ways to donate, everything you can find out just on our website. So www.surfridersd.org, and you can find out all you want about how to get involved and be a part of our family at Surf Rider San Diego.
AM 1170, The Answer.
That's right. If you're just joining us here on Homefront, you missed out on a great first segment. In the studio, we have Didi and Paul Servino. And that gorgeous voice you're hearing is one of the only Italian tenors that can sing Irish music. I've had in a grand tradition of Homefront, some of our best stories take place in the green room or on the break. Didi and Paul are actually here in town for their anniversary, and Paul was sharing with us that at dinner they were approached by some Italians, and you ended up wowing them with...
No, last night, Irish.
Irish.
Oh, excuse me. you were approached by some Irish fans that are here in La Jolla visiting.
Yes. And they're on vacation from Ireland.
And so with a beautiful lilt, they said what as they approached the table?
Well, this is so charming. First of all, Irish people are really, it's a cultural advantage they have that they're more charming than almost anybody else. Their love of the language, their beautiful way with words.
Yeah, the ability to turn a phrase and express.
Oh, extraordinary. And a great literature from Ireland. Anyway, so this man comes over with his wife and a tall man, and he says, "Mr. Servino," he said, "we're here from Ireland, but I just want to tell you I love every one of your movies." And I said, "Why don't I say it again now? It's wonderful of you to say that." And he starts to roar. And his wife says, I will pray for you every night. I'll put your name up, and I'll pray for you every night because I so love what you're doing." And so I said, "I'm the only Italian tenor who sings the Rose of Tralee." And so I started to sing it. And they were just bowled over. And then we sang Clada, you know. "We're going across the sea to Ireland." And they were just so thrilled. And it was just a terrific evening. They had the courage to come up and say hello to me, which a lot of people are afraid to. And I don't blame them, because you go up to a lot of people who are movie guys and TV people.
Oh, they're rude.
And they're kind of, "Not now," that kind of thing.
Paul's always gracious. He's always gracious. You know, he appreciates fans.
It's 60 seconds in my life. It's the rest of their life.
You know, it's also something that ties into something you expressed earlier, which is an amateur needs to feel up to the task or inspired in order to do something, but a professional does in order to be inspired. And this idea of always being at work, you know, that you're on vacation, you're out on an anniversary dinner, and someone approaches you. You're not off the clock. You're still a public figure, and you're honoring the person in front of
you.
Because, you know, they've made your career possible. And that sense of honor for the person in front of you is inspiring. That even if you're not feeling great or honoring your commitments,
you've got to be a human being.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and what do they want? They just want to say, now if someone says, "Hey, I seen you in that picture," well then, excuse me, not now. But graceful people, you just have to make your time for them. And that's all right with me, or else I'll stay home and watch television. You know?
You're both, Didi, you and Paul both are in the business of public-facing things, not just acting or writing, but, you know, Paul, you're talking about sculpture and art. And you're also talking about this idea that you have to press even when it doesn't feel fun.
That's when it's most. Because what calls for more. Look. I made a painting of a sculptor, it was me, going crazy because he's looking at the work and it just won't work. And this happens. So no matter what you do, it doesn't come alive. I can assure you that, now I don't want to create the impression that working is unpleasant. It's very pleasant. But what it calls for is the discipline of artistry, which is to say, the amateur, I'm going to make something. I feel good. I'm going to make a drawing today. I'm going to have a painting today. Michelangelo didn't say that. He said, "Okay, I'll have some coffee. Give me my tools." You know, and he walks over to work. I have always respected skill, acquiring of skill by people, whether great or not great. A potter can be a very admirable person. He and I work with the same materials, with clay. I go in a different path. I go to create something. He goes to recreate something, which is magnificent. My point is to enjoy, if you're really going to enjoy something and get fulfilled, I would say work, They say it must be very relaxing to paint and sculpt. I said, no, it's not relaxing. If I'm relaxing, you know, I'll watch a tennis game. Right. Oh, is it so relaxing when you do that? No, it's not relaxing. What I have to do is set up my, if it's a sculpture, I have to take out my clay. I have to pound it into shape. I have to make an armature. I go through a lot of steps, and then I go into it. But what it is and what it does in fine is it fills you with that labor of love.
I think Paul has enough respect and pride for the art that he takes everything seriously. It's very important to him, all of it. That's the difference, I think.
I think you have to bring the full...
Yeah, they're very important to me. Exactly.
You have to bring the full complement of your focus to bear on something that's not natural. When you were saying, you know, an amateur does something because they're inspired and a pro does it in order to be inspired.
Yeah.
You know, when you really have to be dialed in order to do something well and bring the full complement of your faculties to be good at it, not just great at it, that demands something of you.
Well, I was born with certain abilities. One of them, I could draw from the time I was very small. Draw and paint. I could do all of that. And I had the ability with words and acting and reading and all of that. Singing, music, it was all there.
But
I worked
working
like a
since 10 years old. He's a worker. Since 10 years old, he was a little kid selling papers in the street. Who does that? Not even allowed now.
I think that ethic around putting forth effort, if you're already great, a lot of times people don't want to put in the minuscule difference to become Olympic. And the difference between people...
But that little difference...
That's where the space of the universe is.
You want to buy a stereo opera, audio equipment, you can buy a fantastic setup for about 10 grand, you know, speakers and things.
Right.
But if you want a 3% increase, another 100 grand.
It's exponential.
It's just that space. And just, I know a lot about this. It's that space that you must enter. And it calls for a huge amount of effort, divine inspiration, whatever. But it's all of a sudden, it's the one that makes the magic.
You know, you were talking on the break about doing a table reading, and that's a great place to see what level of preparation someone has done, whether they're reading the words in front of them and scanning them and just reciting them in sort of a moment, or they've really put in the preparation. You know, I feel that way a lot of times when we host guests, that if you really put in the preparation, you can have a special experience because you put forth the effort not just to get to know them, but to get to know how to convey that. When you think about the roles that you're known for, the reason that an Irish person from across the pond and across the continent approaches you is because you probably made them feel something.
Yeah.
And when you think back about different roles, when did you have to dig deep or really overcome something? I've read about so many different actors when they were feeling miserable, had to convey a sense of joy, or they were feeling elated, but they had to sort of...
But that's technique.
Sure.
I know, but Paul almost didn't do Goodfellas, but he dug deep and he found it. You should tell him the story, honey.
Well, Scorsese called for me, and I would have said dinner is served in a movie for him. You know, I wanted to work in a Scorsese movie. And I walk in, and he's smiling like a Cheshire cat. I knew I had the role immediately. I walked in with my black cashmere coat, and I borrowed a pinky ring and did the gangster thing, right? And because people, by the way, a lot of your listeners, they don't think... that I play gangsters, they think I am a gangster. Let's get rid of that right now.
Right.
I'm a poet, a writer, a sculptor, a painter, an actor, a director, but I'm nothing like a gangster. Now,
but you are like a boss.
I am like a boss. That's
you've worked as auxiliary law enforcement, and you've been in positions of trust. And
I was in the auxiliary in Pennsylvania, deputy sheriff in Pennsylvania.
So quite the opposite.
Oh, yeah. And played a lot of cops and... the cops love me. Paulie. She got scared. A couple of cops started to run down the street in New York City.
And they were running after us. I'm like, oh my God, what do we do? You know? And they're like, Paulie, can we have a picture? Yeah. That's all they wanted was
really
a picture.
Cool. But you have to feel exultant. And how do you create that if you feel terrible? Well, I mean, absent a death in the family, which you shouldn't work at that point. But if you're feeling that way, there are technical ways that you should have learned to overcome that. For instance, there was a woman I worked with who was supposed to play my love interest. I didn't care for her at all. Mm-hmm. But on screen, you would believe that I loved her.
You sold it.
It's because that's technique. You learn how to do this.
You're a professional.
When you were talking about going in there with Scorsese and you'd gotten into character in both attire and mentality, yeah. And you knew you had it. What led you? Like you said, it would have been an honor to work with him. You would have read the phone book for him. His great reputation, his great skill. You would have read the phone book for him.
Yeah, his greatest American director since Kazan.
What was hard about that role for you, though?
Well, if you want to hear that one, that's an interesting story. I think I was. I wanted to do it. And most roles that I do, and I've done a couple, what's the place coming down? Most roles that I've done, almost 200 movies and stage and opera and things, I know what to do as soon as I read it. I also have a tremendous memory, so I don't have to study lines. I just look at it and I pretty much know it. And that... But that doesn't do what you needed to do. That's just the coat, you know. And when I was working and I looked at this thing, and I was with Scorsese, and I said, while I'm talking to him, I have no idea how to play this role. Because it's the first one with that kind of gangster menace gravitas. I hadn't played that. I didn't know, you know, it's the kind of thing, hey, give me some gabardines, whack that guy. Now, listen, I want to tell you about my granddaughter. She brought in a pitcher. So the bifurcation of this character was looking really difficult to me. I mean, yeah, I could play an Italian middle-aged man from New York. Yeah, that's really hard. Yeah, who am I going to base
that's
that
a stretch.
On? Like, look in the mirror, right? And then, well, my uncles and so forth. And I tried to, but this lethal thing, and I started working on it, and it wasn't coming. I started to practice it in supermarkets. And you can't... You see, it's not an emotion, which I can go to work with today. Anything I need, I have it right there. But if you're talking about not even a mentality, it's a kind of being that makes you into a terrible person like Hitler, or makes you into Robin Williams, a gifted comedy genius. Well, how the hell do you do that when you don't know how to do it? And I didn't know how to do it. And I worked, and 3 days before production, this is a month, I called my manager and I said, get me out. I don't know what to do. I'm going to ruin the movie. I'm going to ruin myself. He said, okay, call me tomorrow. If you still feel this way, I'll get you out. It can cost $100,000. They can sue you for the first week that you cost them.
Sure.
So I was despairing. I couldn't find that sense of it. And that night I was going out to dinner, and we all wore ties in those days. And I stepped in front of the mirror and adjusted my tie. And I saw this. Like I'm looking at you now. I jumped back a foot and said, what the hell is that? And I said, that's the guy. You found him. Hallelujah. And I called my manager. I said, don't worry. Disregard page one. We're doing just fine. And it was one of the easiest roles I have ever played. Once I found the key. But it came from every waking moment for a month working on it.
I think that that compartmentalizing a sense of honor for a director, this excitement about an opportunity, and this frustration is that same sense of being at odds, this duplicity and this duality of the character.
Yes.
You know, there's someone that has that much compassion for their family. And
just like this, we do. Just like regular people.
And you don't have to be an Italian gangster to see that.
Sure.
The thing about good art is you can see yourself in it because it's universal.
Well said.
And I think that's...
I like that's the shortest that's ever been described to me. I'm going to not forget that. The thing about art is you see yourself in it. I love that.
I think that's really...
I shall purloin it.
I think that's really true. And, you know, not to paraphrase a great poet, but, you know, sometimes we get caught up in these identities. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm an Italian. We are humans. And I think, you know, because you're fully human, nothing is beyond your reach.
Yeah.
You know, you see yourself in all kinds of other experiences. I think that's why that role resonates and people still approach you today, because you really captured something that's universal. Yeah. This has been a fantastic segment. If you're just joining us, you have missed out. The first segment, we had Dee Dee and Paul Servino here in the studio. And the second segment, we talked a little bit more about the craft of art and hospitality. They have written a book that sold out on Amazon. If you didn't get it for Christmas and you're stuck reading it on Kindle and you want to get those beautiful pages in your hot little hands, it's called Pinot Pasta and Parties. Stick around for the third segment here on Homefront.
And she's the one who knows about hospitality. Everything.
Put her hand in mine and said she loved me so.
AM 1170,
The Answer.
As a United States Marine veteran, my life is dedicated to service. My name is Mike Sherbakoff, and I started the Greatness Foundation with the mission to optimize human potential and create a better world. We believe changing the world starts from within, and we provide people just like you with the resources and opportunities to be more, do more, and give more. This is your official invitation to join the fastest growing community of world changers passionate about making a difference. Our greatness is not what we have, but what we give. Learn more and get involved at greatness.ngo. That's greatness.ngo.
Hey guys, it's Daniel Lehman. I am the director of VA Lending for Veterans One Home Loans here in San Diego, California. We believe that if you've served your country, you deserve to own a piece of it. Most banks see their role as getting you a loan once you're ready. Our role is very different in the sense that we focus on education and planning from an early stage in your home buying process. If you're ready to get on the path to home ownership, or if you have any questions at all, please give us a call at 760-655-1419 or visit us at v1lending.com. That's v1lending.com.
This is Alex West, CEO and founder of One More Wave. We're a veteran nonprofit, and we make customized surfing solutions for wounded and injured veterans. I started the nonprofit because I realized that there was a bunch of veteran surfers out there that didn't have any surfboards that were customized to their injuries. And at that point, I decided to start One More Wave. If you want to find ways to help out, go ahead and go to our website, onemorewave.net, and see how you can help impact the veteran suicide rate and also help these veterans get one more wave.
My name is Chris Keene, and I'm the executive director of the Armed Services YMCA on Camp Pendleton. We offer 24 unique programs and services for our Marines, sailors, and their families in order to make military life just a little bit easier. You can go to our website, camppendletonasymca.org, or Google Camp Pendleton ASYMCA. Click on that red donate button, donate your time, donate your money, and allow us to take care of our Marines, sailors, and their families.
San Diego's very own late-night comedy variety show, Tonight in San Diego, wants you to be part of their live studio audience. Each show is jam-packed with comedy acts, musical performances, and special guest interviews. And get this, the tickets are just $7. Join us every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. at the Jeffrey Theater in downtown San Diego near Spreckles. Tickets and guest info can be found at our website, tonightinsandiego.com.
Hi, this is Flossie Hall, owner of Healthy Mama. I started Healthy Mama because I'm a mother of four and a military spouse and had a hard time finding healthy options for my family. I started this company to help keep my family on track with healthy meals without having the complicated tasks of cooking all day every day. We offer the most affordable meal prepping service in San Diego. Healthy meals delivered to your door every Sunday. All you do is heat and eat. Order Healthy Mama meal prepping today at www.healthy-mama.com.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
And one just for spy, and one for the road that...
Welcome back to Homefront. This has been a fantastic show. Todd, great job with the custom music today.
Fine. It was fun finding those gems.
You know, we were excited to host you guys. Thank you for spending a little bit of your time on your anniversary trip to join us here in the Homefront Studios. Paul and I were excited going through your music catalog, and there were some fun things. The hardest thing about it was picking which songs to kind of to work in today.
Yeah, I just heard that you had on from The Baker's Wife.
Yeah.
I forgot the lyrics now, but it was a beautiful music. The show didn't work, but the music was great.
So you guys actually met in a setting someone like this.
Yes.
You guys were sort of going back to back on what, Neil Cavuto?
Is that yes. Right? And then we call him Dr. Love now.
So were you in the green room getting ready to go in and chatting, and then one of you went in and the other hung around for the other, and you decided
go
to...
Go ahead, honey. I know you love to tell the story.
I was on.
Okay.
I get off, and somebody walks by me. I get a kind of a double take, and I'm not quite understanding it, okay? But that's interesting, and... We go in, and I'm starting to get ready to go in the green room, and the coffee area is just about like that far away.
Sure.
And I'm putting my coat on, and I see her in there, and I saw an aura around her. Now, I'm not the kind, those of you who know me or about me, I'm not a tree hugger, and I don't do aromatherapy.
But that day you saw an aura.
I saw an aura, and it was gold, a gold aura around her.
I'm glad it wasn't black.
I have been told this by other people who saw her that they saw it too. So two other people have described it and said it scared them. So I looked at her. It didn't scare me. You know, fools rush in. I'm the head of that line always.
All right.
I looked at her and I said, that's for me. Those are the words that came to my mind. Not, oh, I like it. That's for me.
Not even she's for me. That's for me.
That's for me. So the producer says, Spinato, we're going to go have dinner.
Another Italian.
Spinato. He says, we're going to have dinner at Fresco, Del Fresco. He said, would you like to go? I said, is she going? I don't know. I said, ask her.
So he ran over begging me to go. I'm like, what is wrong with you? He's like, you have to go. You must go over with this. I'm like, okay, fine.
So we start walking. It's a block away. Go out in the street, walking. We're getting there. And I'm just so completely entranced and just talking to her and hoping that I'm not making an idiot out of myself and just putting on my best behavior, my best intellectual regular guy behavior, you know?
And then
I'm trying to really impress the hell out of
her. And then you turned into a brute.
What?
A brute. You turned into a brute.
I turned into a brute. Here's what happened. We go inside, and they seat us at a table, and she says it's a bar. I remember a table. All right. But
no,
anyway,
we
I wouldn't let anybody get near
table.
Her.
We had drinks, and it turned into dinner.
I didn't let anybody get near her. I immediately sat down next to her, like, as if, get out of my space, you know? And I'm 6 foot.
It's a shame this is radio because Paul just demonstrated classic mate guarding behavior. He puffed up his chest like a grouse and then flapped his wings out a little bit. That's how you,
So, and I'm a big guy. I'm 6'3", you know, sorry. So I'm sitting next to her and talking to her and talking to her. And I see that I'm not going to get smacked in the face. I see that there's an interest there. How much I really didn't know. But I felt it, and I saw it, and, you know, a man knows if he has any experience with women. And so I put my arm around her. And I didn't get pushed away. Another minute or two, you can't see it because it's radio, but I pulled her to me like this, and I kissed her on the lips. And she kind of looks at me, and I said, and it was like an involuntary thing. I
didn't
think it out.
Because usually I kick some guy off the chair for just meeting them and doing that. I would never allow that. But it just happened and I was right.
I just couldn't. It was involuntary. I had to do it. I didn't think about it. I just did it.
And I'm joking about him being a brute. He was a gentleman about it.
You know,
I could get arrested for that now.
Yeah, for sure.
3 years later, you're celebrating an anniversary, and you guys did a really simple, humble ceremony, and just after Christmas and before New Year's. So 3 years later, thank you for sharing your anniversary weekend with us. You know, when you talk about this idea that in a green room you're hosting people and people are coming and going, I can't help but bring it back to your book again, this idea that when you create a space of hospitality, that you bring people in, people that may have otherwise never met, that you think highly of, are entered in the same circles. And that used to be a lot more common story, that people said, I had a couple people on my show, they met, they fell in love. I had a couple people over at my house, they met,
pre-computers.
They fell in love. Yeah, and I think that another thing about this book is you're trying to restore a sense of civility and human connection. I think we may have gone so far in one digital direction that people are desperately seeking analog interaction, you know, eyeball to eyeball, breathing the same air, in the same room at the same time, feeling the same temperature. And I think that this book is a restoration of that kind of civility, and I really appreciate you guys writing it. I know that it's a beautiful book, and it's a love story, and it's sharing a sense of tradition, but it's also a field manual to people who are trying to bring civility back into their homes. I've heard so many people, you know, I just turned 40. I have so many friends that say, gosh, we used to sit down at dinner every night, or gosh, we used to always do that on Sunday, and they haven't cooked a meal in their own home in months. They've packed sandwiches for lunch, and they've got things to snack on, but they haven't actually sat down and made a meal in their home in a really long time.
They need our book.
Well, and I learned this from Paul, because that's the Italian way. You know, you gather, you have the meal, you share everything, you know, the drinks and this and that, and then everybody's happy. After the meal, everybody's happy. So you're very astute to bring that up. I think certain politicians, maybe it'd be very helpful for them to bring in the other side and have a dinner. Maybe things would get done a little better.
I also think when you create a sense of hospitality, you're willing to entertain something that makes you a little more uncomfortable. You know, when you're being fed and you're in someone's home, I heard a story very recently about a Bay Area couple that had joined this wine club, and there's this other couple they loved, and they were over at their house, and the four of them were having fun, and one of them said, hey, I'm going to chop up some more vegetables. That was great. Let's get a little bit more. And they went in there and they glanced at the fridge and they saw something from an opposing political perspective.
Uh-oh.
And they just choked it down. And then they went back and they had a wonderful time. And in the car ride home, they turned to their spouse and said, you never guess what I saw in the fridge. And she told him, and he goes, well, we liked him, didn't we? Like, remember when we used to do that? We used to be, you know, friends with our neighbors and members of our parish or our church that had different opinions, but they were part of our community, and it would never get in the way of a nice meal or sharing a friendship.
Well, we don't talk politics at our parties. I mean, because that tends to get a little sketchy, because we want everyone to have a wonderful time. So we just talk about the fun things in life, and it's, you know, Paul will play the piano, sing a little, I mix extra drinks, and then everybody's feeling much better.
Well, and that's kind of the point of my story, is that this couple had enjoyed each other as humans that were
and
interesting, that had interest.
Interfered with by political nonsense.
Yeah, they'd been hanging
nonsense.
Out. They'd been hanging out for a while, and if not for seeing something in passing, you thought, well, these are still great humans, and maybe they've got different private. We used to be more private about some of those convictions and took them out of the ballot box.
It's crazy now, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy.
Well, a dear friend of mine is Andrew Cuomo.
And that's the way it should be.
And his father was one of my very dearest friends.
Well, and that's who came to your birthday party. Governor Cuomo's like, of course I'll be there
for
Ball.
For
kidding
an hour.
Me? And Mr. Big from the show you did, Law and Order, and Evander Holyfield. I mean, we really had an array of characters.
But I think when you treat people well, that other stuff doesn't matter, because
she knows all about throwing parties, setting them up, getting it done in the right way, and
we never bring up politics because you never know how people react.
It's all about, as you said, hospitality and affection. I mean, my wife is a person with a huge heart, unless she doesn't like it.
Don't tell anyone.
But she does have a huge heart. So when she's doing something like that, it's an expression of her generosity as a human being, the generosity of spirit and heart. And she's got that more than anybody I've ever known.
I just like for people to have fun, feel good, celebrate every day. We celebrate every day, so we like to share that with everyone. And this is a way to do it with the book.
I think that definitely comes across. You know, I had a chance to read the text on Kindle because I was waiting for my hard copy to come in.
On what?
In,
but
on the,
Kindle,
on
honey.
A Kindle. It's just an electronic version.
Because yes.
I couldn't get it. I couldn't get my hands on this because you guys
sold,
sold them. They were underneath trees and in stockings. They couldn't get a hard copy to save my life this month. But, you know, to see it, even the way that you put this thing together shows a sense of honor for hospitality, and I appreciate you writing it. You both had really interesting careers, and we've had other friends of the show on here that knew you personally. You know, Denise Gitsum was
a
friend of the show.
Great lady.
That spoke highly of you, and you know, 20 years ago, you guys had moved in some of the same circles and worked hard to get to where you are now. You're both really accomplished, and it's an honor to get to know you better. You know, Paul, I want to ask you one more question. You're talking about art, and you're talking about there's these universal things across that, and you're talking about the effort that goes into it. Is there an insecurity as an artist when you've given your best and you're waiting for the reaction? I know you're talking about having art in galleries. I know you must feel good about what you do, but you always want it to land. You want those punches to land.
Oh, you do. Now, I don't know. I make a painting. I like it. She likes it.
Honey, tell the audience about Jackie Robinson.
Oh, yeah, we had
Paul did a bust of
I was
Jackie
commissioned
Robinson.
To do a bust of Jackie Robinson, a boyhood hero of mine, you know, the Dodgers. And so I took the commission, and I had to do it very quickly. And I can work quickly if I have to. And I'm doing it. And a couple of times I started to break down. I said, I can't do this. I can't get it done. It's looking like Burt Reynolds. I can't.
It did.
It's not working. And so Bert is a nice guy, but I'm not doing it.
It doesn't look like Jackie Robinson.
And she says, no, you're going to. I said, I think I got to quit. And she said, you're not going to quit. You're going to do this because you can't let Jackie down. She held my hand, and there are tears in her eyes and in my eyes. And she says, you're not going to let yourself or Jackie down. You're not going to do that. I know you can do it. I finished it that night at 2 a.m. with her there, you know. And I said, what, did I make it? She said, you're done. We took it hot.
It was
the next
warm
morning,
when
a few hours
it.
Later, to the foundry, and they started it immediately. I had to pay twice to get it done very quickly. And they sent it out when it was still hot from the torch that you have to put on the patina with about a few days later.
And a couple days later, it was unveiled in Times Square, and everybody gasped. They were like, oh, it's just
tremendous,
so beautiful.
Reaction. I did. I wasn't sure that would happen.
There's
people came up to me and said, some women came up and said, looking at it makes me cry.
There's such complexity to his story. It's interesting because he was such an accomplished athlete, but the sport he was probably least naturally talented at was baseball, but that at the time was where the money was, and there was a chance to really do something great.
What a man.
What an incredible man. And very gifted. When I was deployed, someone had given me a book of his correspondence between himself and very public figures. He's a very thoughtful person, a brilliant man.
Yes.
Who I think is known for, you know, being a great athlete, but he had a great mind.
He did. And
a very proud person. He had to endure an incredible amount.
My friend lived around the corner from him in Brooklyn. After a game, he would go and start playing ball with the kids in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He started throwing the ball, playing ball. That's the kind of guy he was. And also, he gave me a great gift, and all the boys in Brooklyn felt this. The great gift was the freedom from racism. Because here he was, a black man on a team that was our soul. I still haven't forgiven them for moving to L.A., the Dodgers, and I won't.
And none of my confreres
will.
Who told you, Paul, it's time? Who told you that?
Huh?
Who said, Paul, it's time to forgive?
Oh, yeah, no, that was Big Don Newcomb, the great pitcher. He said, Paul, it's time. But, I mean, the point was, well, we didn't see him as a black man on a team. We didn't see him as a Negro. We didn't see him as anything different but a great athlete who brought our team to the World Series.
As a Dodger.
As a Dodger, and he was so great.
And a great man.
We all just loved him to this day. That's why I had wept several times making the sculpture, because I said, I can't do it. She said, you're not going to let him down.
I think
you're not going
to
do that.
You know, I talked to, I grew up in the South, and my mom grew up in segregated schools in Alabama, and she said, you know, that for a lot of her peers and their sons, that, you know, Michael Jordan did more to integrate homes by being on bedroom walls, and, you know, athletes have done more to integrate homes
by being
on baseball cards.
Yeah, the kids love them,
And, you know, that's true for the way that athletics can teach us in the same way that art can teach us. Todd's giving the okey-doke. I have to wind this up, but we could talk to you guys for a couple hours. It was such an honor to have you in the studio. I appreciate you guys coming.
Do you have the check, by the way?
I do. So, you guys have been fantastic. And, you know, for you to share your gift of hospitality on your anniversary, to come in here and share with us a little bit about your story.
It's a love story, my friend. More than anything else, it's a love story. And every day we got up, she said, aren't we having the most fun?
And you never
Isn't this the greatest thing? It's 3 years down, and we're happier than anybody.
And we put it in a book. We want everyone else to have the same experience. So thank you for having us, Aaron.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you missed quite a show. In the studio, we've had Dee Dee and Paul Servino. The book is called Pino, Pasta, and Parties. It's available on Amazon and retailers everywhere.
Never, never change. Keep that breathless charm.
AM 1170, The Answer.
My name is Mark West, and I am the chair of Surfrider San Diego. As a San Diegan, and as a person who's lived here in San Diego, we have one of the greatest coastal communities in all the world. We have 72 miles of beaches that stretch all the way from Tijuana to San Clemente. It's really our greatest natural resource. It's part of our culture, it's part of our history, and we need to preserve and protect it. And that doesn't mean I want to put a giant rope around it so it's pristine. No, I want people to go out and enjoy it and be a part of it, because that's what really makes San Diego a special place that we call home. If you feel as strongly as I do about protecting our ocean waves and beaches, get on our website. It's www.surfrider, that's SURFRIDERSD.org. Plenty of information about all our committees, events, ways to donate, everything you can find out just on our website. So www.surfridersd.org, and you can find out all you want about how to get involved and be a part of our family at Surfrider San Diego.
There are thousands of military families who need your help finding housing here in San Diego. Hi, my name's Lauren Taylor, the founder and creator of PCS Pay It Forward. Military families have difficulty finding rental homes here in San Diego because of the great demand and the high price points. Our San Diego support group has over 2,000 military members who are looking for homes in our area. If you're considering putting up your property for rent, please message us on Facebook so we can feature it to our military families. Or if you're a military family looking for help, use this free resource to make sure that you're protected in finding your next home.
Mental health is an issue that affects everybody. Sometimes, even though it's a sunny day, we don't feel sunny inside. Hi, I'm Dr. Alexandra Lafer, licensed clinical psychologist. Part of the work that I do as a psychologist is to help you discover your inner strength and ways to regain your sunshine again. It's okay to have struggles in your life, but please don't be afraid to ask for help. You can reach me at 760-814-9925 or at DrAlexandraLafer.com. That's DrAlexandraLafer.com.
Hi, I'm
I'm Suprilazni with Sustainable Surplus. We're a local nonprofit that provides lightly used assets to those in need. We take excess items from companies, everything from office supplies and furniture to computers and lab equipment, and then we redistribute them to local schools and nonprofits, military and startup organizations. We just opened our first store in Carlsbad called Reuse for Good. The average savings on an item is 85%. An office chair that would normally be $300 is only $35 in our shop. It's all about providing for those who need. If you have gently used office items or you just want to donate dollars, please go to our website, sustainablesurplus.org.
Hi, I'm Bob Muth, and I'm the managing attorney of the Veterans Legal Clinic at the University of San Diego School of Law. The Veterans Legal Clinic at USD provides free legal services to veterans, active duty, reservists, and their families. If you've had issues when trying to use your post-9/11 GI Bill benefits at a for-profit school, or if you feel the VA is wrongly denying you medical or disability benefits, or if you need help correcting the characterization of your discharge, please give us a call to see if we can help. You can reach us at 619-260-7470.
AM 1170. The Answer. San Diego.
Well, you've gone and done it. You've given us another hour of your time, and we're glad you did. Here on Homefront, in the studio, we had Didi and Paul Servino talking about their new book, Pino, Pasta, and Parties. It is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and anywhere books are sold. Just want to thank them for making a little time during their anniversary trip to La Jolla to come join us at the KCBQ AM 1170 studios. And thanks to Todd for pulling some of this special music from Paul's career and making it a really neat show. Thanks again for tuning in. Join us again next week here on Homefront.
I am just a fool in love. Fool not to be. All the stars dance and sing as I pluck at the strings. I'm just a fool.